the America's Jobs Team podcast. For economic developers, by economic developers. Join the Consultant Connect team every Tuesday and Thursday for discussions surrounding the latest in our industry.
Learn from fellow economic development heroes, get leadership advice, keep on top of industry trends and shifts, and so much more. You are a part of America's Jobs Team.
And we're so glad that you're tuning in.
If you are wanting to learn about creative deal structuring and how economic development tools can work together to haul projects across the finish line, today's episode is full of gold for you. So I sat down with my former colleague, Joe Agostinelli, who is now the executive director at the Grand Rapids Area Revitalization Task Force. And Joe has a really keen eye for using incentive and community development tools in non-traditional ways. So I picked his brain about things like tax increment financing, brownfield redevelopment financing, community development tools, grant funding, and a bunch more stuff. So Joe shares how he built his knowledge of these toolkits, and he walks us through how to layer these tools onto one another to bring home more investments in his communities. So let me pause talking here and let's shift over to this interview because I cannot wait for you to listen in. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I'm Faye Davis, and I am really excited because I get to talk to Joe Agostinelli today and pick his brain. Joe used to be one of my colleagues, and he has since moved on, and he's still doing such awesome work. So, Joe, thank you so much for being here today. How are you? What's going on?
Good morning, Faye. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, anytime. So before we get into the nitty gritty, because I want to talk to you about creative deal structuring and, you know, you've got a lot of knowledge in the brownfield area, but I first want to give you a chance to kind of set us up with knowledge of your background. So can you talk us through, you know, your journey in economic development and, you know, what was your plan when you went to college and how did you get to where you are right now?
Yeah, sure. So like most people who are on this podcast, I didn't start out trying to find economic development. It found me. I graduated from the University of Michigan with a degree in political science, and I was going to enter what I would joke as my family business of politics. The first election I voted in, I casted ballots for 5 different members of my family in 5 different offices. So I had this plan to, you know, run for office and do the public service thing. Got a degree in political science, went to work at the state capitol for a state senator who happened to chair the Senate Committee on Commerce and Tourism. And that's the committee where all the state's economic development incentive tools, you know, new tools or changes to existing tools would run through that committee. So I was a senator's legislative director, and that was sort of my first experience to this whole world of economic development and the statutory programs that support the incentives in Michigan. And through that work, when my boss was term limited out of office, I went to work at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, and sort of the rest is history from there. I've had stops in the private sector working for a commercial real estate development company, spent the last 7 years at Southwest Michigan First doing corporate attraction, commercial real estate development, a little bit of public policy in there for a while. And now I'm took an opportunity about a year ago, about an hour up the road from Kalamazoo in Grand Rapids, leading the Grand Rapids Area Revitalization Task Force, which was created by the mayor of Grand Rapids to pull together community partners focused on getting through and recovering from the COVID pandemic. So very, very exciting and challenging work.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, you have really gotten a reputation over the course of your career for being a really creative deal structurer when you're working projects in economic development. So I would really like to pick your brain a little bit about that. So, you know, costs of materials and goods for projects to get underway are higher than they have ever been. So, you know, it seems that incentive support to make these deals economically feasible is more important than ever. So what are some of those creative programs that you have leveraged in projects to make the dollars and cents count?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an Italian guy, so I always refer to the capital stack as lasagna financing, lots of layers in the lasagna. And, you know, that's what it takes to get projects done. I think in this environment, you hit the nail on the head. Material costs are going through the roof. There's labor shortages everywhere in the country that's driving the construction activity through the work. So anytime you've got a project with new construction or any construction involved, you know, the costs have increased dramatically over the last 18 months. So, you know, the incentives play a much, much bigger role in today's environment. Every state has different programs, right? I'm familiar with Michigan's programs. And, you know, so there, a lot of times the key is looking at some of the tools that we have that maybe are a community development tool and saying, you know, all right, how can we leverage that program in a way that supports this business development deal? And really thinking about the tools differently. I find there's often a lot more gray area in these statutory programs than people realize. If you can sort of think of the project through a different lens, then there's often a way that you can leverage a non-traditional tool to fit the project that you're working on, layering a bunch of those on top of each other.
Yeah, no, I love that. And later I'm going to get to a different question where I would love for you to walk me through some examples. But for right now, can you walk me through, you know, what tax increment financing is and how projects through different programs can leverage that TIF to support new development?
Sure. So we're recording this pretty early in the morning. So tax increment financing
That's why we're doing this early in the morning. So you have lots of energy to talk me through it.
Right. So TIF is a heavy topic for a podcast, Faye, but the best way, you know, to think about tax increment financing is you're leveraging the investment of a project, and that investment is generating new, and in Michigan's case, real estate taxes, but it could be other types of taxes that are being created by the project. And that growth and new revenue that doesn't exist today but will exist tomorrow as a result of the project gets captured by some mechanism and is used to inject dollars back into a project over time as that new investment continues to pay taxes in the future. So in Michigan, our tax increment financing tools, there's actually 7 of them for various things from housing development to brownfield redevelopment to improvements around lakes. With sewer and water infrastructure. Those tools are used to inject new dollars into projects. Those in Michigan, those are real estate tax driven, but there's certainly in other states, there is actually one program in Michigan that leverages income taxes that are generated. But the whole idea is you're providing an incentive to a project that doesn't actually cost anything to the incentive provider in today's dollars. You're delaying the upside of the project for some period of time and allowing those dollars to flow back into a project to make it viable.
So knowing what you know about the tools in Michigan and you have knowledge about tools in other states, you know, if you had a magic wand, what program or resource would you implement at our state level to support companies growing or expanding into our state?
I think any economic developer would say a big pile of unrestricted cash. that would be, you know, there are some states that have more flexible deal closing funds. But if I could wave my magic wand, just an unrestricted pool of money that could be used to go close deals that was easy and flexible to access. That's a challenging political ask sometimes. So I think, more realistically or secondary to that would be, you know, more flexibility within our tax increment financing programs. In Michigan, there's, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of gray area in those programs, but there's still guardrails that you have to follow in terms of the statutory structure of those programs. So, you know, in a perfect world, you'd say, if we as a community want to do this project and we want to support it at whatever level we're interested in supporting it at, just giving that flexibility to the local community to do that. We don't have that flexibility entirely right now in Michigan. So at the end of the day, it's all about ease to the market, speed to the market for the tools. So building more flexibility and access is what I'd ask for.
And I think that's so important because right now the speed is not slowing down. We were talking about this 5 years ago, how speed to market is just ever increasing and the pace is increasing and it's not slowing down. COVID hasn't slowed it down. It's sped it up, if anything, even though the lead timelines on construction and all of that is lagging behind, but the speed of projects is just insane right now. Earlier, I talked a little bit about how I want to talk to you about your brownfield knowledge. You have incorporated a lot of brownfield tactics and utilization of tools in your creative deal structuring throughout your career. So is there anything unique about the Michigan Brownfield Redevelopment Financing Act? That's a mouthful. Compared to other states, you know, how does that make it an important tool for Michigan projects?
Yeah, Michigan's is unique from what I understand compared to other states' programs. So when we're talking about brownfield, we're talking the thought that comes to mind and for everyone is a dirty, contaminated, radioactive glow-in-the-dark site. and yes, those sites are definitely out there. That's what Michigan's program was initially created. And most programs dealing with brownfield redevelopment were created to address those really nasty legacy sites. And our program still does address those sites. But over the years, since it was created in 1996, it's been expanded and widened a number of times where really the program, we should honestly change the name of the statute to just Michigan's redevelopment program versus brownfield redevelopment program, because the tool now, instead of allowing for tax increment financing capture on projects dealing with environmental cleanup, it's been expanded to allow for you to reimburse non-environmental costs that go into a real estate development, like site preparation. And so that's a lot of the earthwork that gets involved with some of our new construction projects when we're looking at industrial spec buildings and things like that. It allows you to reimburse the cost of public infrastructure to serve these brownfield sites. So sewer and water, gas and electric service to sites. It's been expanded further to allow for property eligibility to no longer just be contaminated sites. So we can use the tool on functionally obsolete buildings. So it's become the primary downtown redevelopment tool, dealing with early 1900s, late 1800s era buildings that we see in a lot of our communities in Michigan and the costs associated with redeveloping those. So things like interior demolition of the buildings can be reimbursed. So our tool is really quite broad in what it can be used for. And as I mentioned before, that it has a fair amount of gray area in the tool where it can become a really, really powerful incentive for job creation projects, for community development projects. It's always the first tool I look to because it can bring the most value to the table. So where that differs from a lot of other states' brownfield programs, from what I understand, is many of them are still solely focused on just the environmental cleanup aspect, which, don't get me wrong, is incredibly important and still the heart of the program, but it can do a lot more than that.
I think that's really cool. And I've always felt this way when I have conversations with you about economic development, but you have such a long history of getting to know these tools in and out. You have such a creative brain about using these tools in various projects. And, what is the process that you go through to help local government officials or other stakeholders understand the value and the necessity of those tools to get a project across the finish line? How does your background help, and not just in government, but just, it's almost like I see your brain working and I'm like, I wish I knew how to do that, because it's just really intriguing because you think about things differently than a lot of other economic developers do.
Yeah. So, the way I approach the incentive and working, there's a lot of parties at the table. So you've got the deal and its needs, you've got the community, the governmental aspect of the community and its needs. You got to think about employees and residents and the broader, non-governmental community's needs. And hopefully you have a project that overlaps all of those in a where everybody's marching in the same direction. The reality is we run into a fair amount of deals where that's not the case. So the way I look at these incentives, for me, having sat at the policymaking side of the table and understanding why the statute says what it says, and then spending some time at the state level administering the programs and kind of seeing the public sector side of that equation. And I've sat at the local level, as a implementing body on at least Michigan's brownfield program, been a consultant to projects. I've been the developer on myself on projects. So having sat on all those sides of the table allows you to see the perspective of the various parties to the deal-making process. So that's been really helpful to me. And I think, there's not a ton of people that come through the political system and then into economic development. So maybe that's why I approach it a little bit different than others. But the important thing is helping all those parties understand the value of the deal, right? And what happens if the incentive doesn't come to the table. I think there's a perception that, these incentives are thrown around like candy, but reality is especially in today's construction environment and labor shortage environment. Projects aren't going to get done without them, and helping the local units of government, state units of government understand that, you know, I think is part of everybody's job in the economic development community. Because I think truly most of the challenges I've run into on projects in the past with sort of hiccups along the way on any given project, it ends up being a lack of understanding of the fact situation versus, I guess, perception versus reality that you encounter. So, you know, you really need to spend the time with all those parties and making sure that everybody's done their homework and you're comfortable moving forward. You never want any surprises at those city council meetings. So investing the time on the front end to ensure that everybody's comfortable or as comfortable as they can be. There's always going to be projects where you've got a naysayer or a dissenter on the project. And, you know, that's okay. Working in politics, you'd say when you have the votes, you vote, you stop talking about it and vote. And so making sure you have that critical mass there before things start moving forward. But it's very rare in my experience that you run into naysayers, and probably count on one hand how many no votes I've seen out of elected officials on projects we've brought forward in my career. And that's, you know, because if you bring a good project with the right toolbox, you know, it's hard for folks to say no to that.
Yeah. Okay. I want to end on this last question. I mentioned it earlier. I really wanted you to tell me about, you know, you don't have to drop any names. You don't have to name any company names or people names, but I'd love to hear about the wildest deal that you've ever worked on. And, you know, kind of talk us through the twists and turns and like how you layered on several tools that ended up getting this project across the finish line.
Yeah. So the wildest project I ever worked was actually a community development project, a commercial real estate development in downtown Kalamazoo. There were four historic buildings built in the 1870 to 1880 that were sort of at the corner of Main and Main and the geographic center of the downtown. At the time, the buildings were boarded up completely. You know, the windows were all broken. As you walked through the building, there were holes in the floors. You could actually flex the 2-foot thick brick wall with one hand on the back of the building. It was that close to falling down. So I actually started working on that project when I worked for the state, and about a quarter of the way through the deal, I was recruited to go work for the developer directly. So I worked on both sides of the equation there. But ultimately, it was a $12 million redevelopment of these buildings. And upon completion, it was worth just shy of $2 million. So about a $10 million financial gap in this project. So we ended up layering together 14 layers of financing to get the project across the finish line, from new markets tax credits, federal historic tax credits, state historic tax credits, the state's enhanced historic tax credit, brownfield tax increment financing from the Downtown Development Authority. There was a grant from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. There was a grant and loan from the city, a grant and loan from the county. I'm sure I'm missing some in there. There was a fair amount of developer equity and conventional debt as well. So it was all these layers that had to all come to the table for this project to work. You know, people joke about the three-legged stool where you pull out one leg and the whole thing falls over. The physics don't exactly work in this 14-layered stool, but one leg coming out would certainly topple the whole thing in that transaction. So it took us probably a good 2.5 years to get through all the financial modeling and the bringing all those parties together. But at the end of the day, it was a wildly successful project. It saved these historic buildings and really the core of the downtown. The buildings today are on a lot of companies and towns' websites. So it's cool to see that, where people see the value of the work we did on that. But that was really a testament of knowing the ability to layer these things on top of each other are what it takes in some of these projects. And I should note that project happened in 2010, 2011. If we had to do that same project today in today's construction environment, I mean, we'd need 20 layers. I don't know what it would look like, but you know what that project taught me is there's a will, there's a way to get the deal across the finish line. In that case, you know, the community was committed to saving those buildings, and we had a developer that, you know, was willing to take on a risk to make it happen. So it was very, very wild, very trying. I joke, if you've ever met me, I've very prematurely gray hair. It was all because of this project.
It's not blonde.
right? Not quite blonde, but it's, yeah, I was proud to see it get across the finish line.
I love that. Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today and talking me through. You know, you were like, that's a heavy topic on a early morning, but I love the way you explain tools, the way you weave the use of different economic development incentive tools into like the way you apply them. So the way you explain things is always so wonderful. So thank you for sharing that not only with me, but with our listening audience. And I'm sure we'll have you back to dive deeper into one of these tools specifically one of these days.
Sounds great, Faye. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sticking with us till the very end. This podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment, Lead Generation for Economic Development, and Gazelle AI. Spend more time closing, less time chasing. Did you like what you heard today? Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Jobs Team podcast is audio engineered by Andrea Fuller and produced by Faye Davis.